University life can be a bit of a maze, right? Don't worry. Campus Chronicles is here to be your guide. It's your go-to spot for tackling the big questions, sharing a laugh, and everything else that comes with navigating campus life. Think of it as the resource and the sounding board that I wish I had back in my uni days. And I am so excited to share it with you. My goal is to leave you feeling inspired, energized, and ready to chase after your boldest dreams. Let's jump in. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to this incredible guest that we have today. His name is Gary Booth, and he is from Checkered Flag Motorsports. And before we even started this recording, Gary and I very much hit it off. So I'm excited to bring all of his insights, all of his expertise, and all of his stories to you today. Gary, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I am so excited to dive into so much of what you were talking about. So just to give us a context, to give us a background story, tell us your origin story and how you got started in the work that you do.
Yeah, no problem. My story goes back many, many years. I am a long-term stroke survivor, having suffered a stroke at the age of 30, which was 32 years ago, a long time, much longer than I care to admit sometimes, which makes me just 21 for those who can do the arithmetic, the maths in that. So I'm a long-term stroke survivor. I suffered a hemorrhagic stroke, which is a burst blood vessel in my brain 30-odd years ago. I was initially left paralyzed on my left side and unable to walk and talk and communicate, putting a lot of hard work to recover physically, to the extent now that probably physically nobody would actually look at me and think, oh, there's a stroke survivor, which creates its own problems, which I'm sure we'll talk about in due course. So I've been fortunate that I made a physical recovery. But as we were just talking about, a stroke essentially kills your brain cells and kills part of your brain. And as we know, brain cells and your brain isn't going to replenish itself naturally. So you're left with some sort of cognitive neurological issues that unfortunately medically here in the UK are not necessarily readily acknowledged unless they can see something physically they don't really want to know. And far, far too many stroke survivors are discharged from hospital without the support that they need and the guidance they need and even the most basic of information that they need to be able to live that new life that they've been confronted with, something they haven't asked for. As part of my own journey, back in 2017, which was just before we had the pandemic and lockdown here in the UK, I wanted to do something. For various reasons, I wasn't working. I sustained a bad back injury and wasn't working. I'm not the sort of person who likes to sit around doing nothing, so I wanted to do something. So I reached out to the National Stroke Charities and asked them if I could do some fundraising for them on their behalf. Being a stroke survivor, obviously, and being very, very aware of my own issues and my own problems to try help others in a similar situation. Naively thinking that things had moved on a great deal since then. And what I started doing was I basically just started doing a variation on business networking to introduce businesses to each other and get them talking, and to use any funds that were generated to help support the national charities. It reached a point where I then wanted to formalise that and create what I had created as a formal company. Once I did that, the charities said that as I had now created a formal company, they couldn't accept any donations from me because of money laundering and fraud issues. So I was left then with still a desire to do something. Yet now the people that I was supposed to be that I was wanting to raise money for had told me that they couldn't accept it. I didn't want to give it up. It was something that I'd started to enjoy. And along this journey, I'd been approached by various other people. The first person to approach me was somebody with autism who was involved in motorsport. I'll come back a little bit to quite how I got involved with the motorsport side of things. But he was involved in motorsport and he wanted to be an ambassador. It was only a young lad of about 15, and I started talking to him a lot about autism and started to realise that there was an awful lot of commonality between what I was suffering neurologically and what he was suffering with, if I can call it that, with his autism. I was then introduced to a group of amputees, single-leg amputees, some of whom were ex-servicemen, some of whom were just members of the general public. And again, it was the same story. They were suffering with PTSD, having lost a limb. And again, all this message kept coming back that it was all neurological. And I realized that it wasn't just about stroke, that there was a big neurodiverse community there. That at that point, I hadn't put a neurodiverse label on it, but there was a big community there, all of whom were suffering with cognitive and neurological issues, who were not necessarily being supported or given a community where they could share experiences, problems, issues, successes, which is a big thing, to share successes on the way forward and identifying how to cope with this new life that's been thrust upon you. So I realised then that it wasn't just about stroke. So I abandoned the fundraising that I was doing for the stroke charities who didn't really want it and set about creating a community where neurodivergent individuals could come together, share their experiences, share the fears, share the successes, yet hopefully do that in an inspirational environment and somewhere where they felt comfortable and safe to open up. Because obviously one of the biggest things is you're very, very much opening yourself out, like the general mental health issues, you're very much opening your heart and your head there to, this is who I am, this is how I feel, which for some people isn't easy to do. For me, I can talk all day, so for me, it's not really an issue. And all I have ever done is I have no medical background and no medical qualifications. So I always say to people at the very outset, whenever they come to one of our events and they hear me talk at the outset, I say, I have no professional qualifications. I'm not going to tell you what to do because everybody's case is individual and I have no qualifications to tell you what to do. But what I do have is I have over 30 years lived experience as somebody coping and battling against the systems and living with a neurodiverse condition. That is what I will use to tell you what I've done, how I've coped. And then if you wish to take that away with you and use that and see if that works for you, that's great. But on the flip side of that, if you think I'm talking an absolute load of rubbish and want to criticise me, again, I have no problem whatsoever with that. I'm not putting myself up to be judged. I'm just using my lived experience over 30-odd years to hopefully help others in a similar situation. So that's what I do. Why did I use motorsport? Well, when I first started doing the business networking to fundraise, I actually purchased a very high-end motor racing simulator, having by chance been to see one at a race car manufacturer and saw that and thought, wow, this is great. Surely there must be somewhere I can do this. So what I found was that the networking events that I put on, I really called business socials, because what happened was people came and had a fun experience time on a racing simulator where we had the fastest lap competitions and all those sorts of things. And all that business networking stuff where business owners engage with each other and talk about businesses, all that happened naturally in a social environment around the focal point of this motorsport simulator. Over time, I started to build some very good relationships within the motorsport industry here in the UK from the very, very top, from people like Red Bull Formula One, who host us, all the way down to junior drivers. So I ended up selling the simulator, and now we're hosted at various venues across the UK with people like Red Bull, Porsche, McLaren, Formula One hosters, all sorts of people. We go to racetracks. We do all sorts of different events. And what we do is, I try to deliver something where as soon as somebody arrives, I could do it in a hotel function room. But we've all been in those sorts of meetings where after 5 minutes, you're thinking, is it coffee time yet? Or how much longer am I going to have to listen to this person? Whereas if you go to a motorsport environment, there's usually an adrenaline and uplift as soon as you get there, and usually something to always grab your attention. Even if I do go on a little bit and make people a little bit bored, there's usually something else around there to keep them engaged. And they go away feeling special. And I know that from the feedback that we get from the events that we do, how special people feel in getting to some of the environments that we get into and being hosted by some of the corporate organisations that we get hosted by. So that in a nutshell, I've gone on an awful long time there, is who I am, what I do, and what Checkered Flag's about, and what I stand for.
Well, I learned so much in that conversation that we had. I have so many follow-up questions, but I'm going to return to the very, very beginning. You bring up an interesting point about getting discharged too early, because if you don't know what to look for, if you don't have a proper understanding of the changes that you might experience, I think it's easy to feel like it's an individualized experience or like there's something specifically wrong with you or like your healing or your progress isn't going in the direction that it should go, when in reality, they are normal issues or normal challenges. but they have never been laid out before. And so how would you know what to expect? And I think that's very, very dangerous and plays really well to the community aspect of what you do, to say this really does happen.
Again, one of the reasons why I do it is of creating that sense of community. And there's a range of, while my focus is still stroke because of my own personal experience, as I say, we do involve amputees with PTSD. We've had single leg amputees racing race cars around the fastest race circuit in the UK, and people looking and thinking, surely that's not possible. Well, yes, it is. I'm the sort of person who I won't accept no. And it was one of the amputees, funnily enough, who'd been in the racing simulator that I mentioned at the professional race manufacturer, who said to me, your challenge now is to get me behind the wheel of a proper racing car. And I took that as a challenge. And that event has now become one of our most popular events across the board with amputees and other neurodiverse individuals. Because unlike a lot of events where people do these things and they go and they maybe do a few laps in a supercar, maybe a Ferrari or something like that, and they do three laps, and then the organisers say, that's it, you've had your three laps, now disappear and don't darken our doors again. With us, we give each person half a day behind the wheel of a race car.
Now that is amazing.
So they get a real good experience. And within that time, it gives them a chance to get to know each other, feel comfortable with each other, share experiences, and as I say, share what they've been through. We have some more recent individuals who are just coming to terms with whatever condition they have. And they want to, like you said, want to know that what they're feeling is normal. And have that verified by somebody, because unfortunately the medical profession will just leave you to drift completely. And as I say, I naively thought that after 30 years the whole situation would have changed. And when I found out that it hadn't really, I was horrified and wanted to do something for that group of people.
And you share that you're talking with someone who went through a similar situation to yourself, and still there's not a lot of support for emotional health. There's not a lot of support for mental health. And to have to go to outside organizations is, yeah.
It's difficult. I mean, because stroke in particular, as I say, forgive me for talking about stroke all the time. I do cover the whole neurodiverse community, but stroke is where my experience comes from. Because that manifests itself in a physical nature, you become paralyzed more often than not down one side or the other. You lose the ability to talk and walk and all those sorts of things, which happened to me. That's where the focus is from the medical profession. Their aim is to get you up and walking and talking again as soon as possible. Now, I won't bore you with why that is, and probably a story for another day. But once they've done that, they then see their job as done and will very quickly shuffle you out of the door. And at that point, when you're at your most vulnerable, without any medical support, trying to come to terms with what's happened to you, trying to understand what's happened to you, trying to navigate your way through a new life that you didn't ask for, that's been thrust upon you, It's shocking that you just left.
That is. Now, I want to shift our focus a little bit because I'm very interested in the work that you do, particularly around motorsports. Why did you choose motorsports in particular?
It was purely by chance that I got invited to, not far from where I live, is the largest, let me get this right, single make multi-model race car manufacturer in the UK, who has now started providing race cars to the US. For those who want to know, that's a company called Ginetta, who are based on the outskirts of Leeds, not far from where I live in the north of England. I was invited, I cashed my way into there. I won't say I was invited, I wasn't invited. I literally went and knocked on their door and pestered them. I went to see, because they do an awful lot of training for professional racing drivers, up to and including Le Mans standard. And they, as such, have a professional racing simulator, which I was fortunate enough to go and see. And to this day, I've never been on myself because it's always been difficult for me to get in and out of it. But other people who've been on checker flag events have actually been on that, and they say we have used that for fastest lap competitions and other bits and pieces, as well as doing factory tours. But it was while I was there and got talking to one of the directors there that the idea formulated to actually use motorsport. And that became, I say, even more when I was approached by the young autistic teenager who was involved in junior motorsport at that time. And he said, motorsport's great because it gives me a sense of purpose. It gives me some structure. It gives me routine in my daily life as somebody struggling with autism, as well as giving me something to enjoy. So it all just fit. As I said, I started off with a simulator of my own, which I bought, which used to do the business social events. before ultimately moving that on to a professional racing driver, and now just using the contacts that I've made within the motorsport industry, which are racing drivers, racing teams of all levels, who will host us and help us put on events that provide a safe, secure environment for people to share their experiences, yet as a standalone event, give somebody something exciting to look forward to and be part of.
Mm-hmm. One thing I like about you a lot, Gary, is how persevering you are and how you mentioned earlier you don't ever want to take no for an answer. So you're always wanting to do more and grow more and be more. And I love that you've taken the experiences that you've gone through and turned them into something so beautiful and positive for others. Is there a rewarding story or experience that you have had making a difference through this organization that you'd like to share?
About 18 months or so ago, I actually published a book on Amazon about my own story. Not an autobiography, because I didn't want it to be autobiographical. Every book I've read so far about stroke is either very, very much autobiographical, or is on this day I woke up and I felt this, on this day I woke up and I felt that. And I didn't want it to be like that, or they use too much medical jargon. And I didn't want it to be like that. I wanted it to be like my events, that I would touch on some of my experiences, but use those to highlight how I had dealt with them and how I had coped. So I published that book, and the guy who did the foreword for me was a guy who'd been on several of our events, and he funny enough, was an amputee, an ex-British Forces amputee, who had lost a leg serving in Afghanistan or Iraq, I can't remember which one. And the first time I met him, he came to one of our track events that I'd mentioned earlier, where we give people half a day behind the wheel of a car. Bearing in mind that this guy had been blown up in an army vehicle and ultimately ended up losing a leg, it was a challenge, first of all, for him to get in a race car, not necessarily physically, but mentally. Particularly when we said, we're going to do what they call a sighting lap, where we just take them around the circuit as a passenger in the car, just so they can become familiar with it. And he said, it's the first time I've been passenger in a vehicle since I was blown up in the army vehicle. I said, Richard, why didn't you tell us? We wouldn't have asked you to do it. And he said, no, I want to do it. I'm here because I want to do it. And he absolutely loved his day and took away his video. And a year later, he did the BLESME, which is a British Armed Forces charity. He did the America Drive Coast to Coast. And he said, had I not done that event with you, there is no way I would have got in a car and driven from one coast of America to the other. And it was just knowing that making a difference to somebody's life in that respect, it was such a change for him to do that, to make that step forward. I can honestly say that everybody who comes on one of our events or hasn't had a bad word to say about them and goes away with a positive experience.
That is beautiful. I love that. I have a curiosity question. What are the age ranges that you traditionally serve?
I don't put any restriction on it whatsoever. The youngest that we've had was a 13-year-old with autism. I tell a lie, younger than that. It's the son of a friend of mine who's severely autistic, and he's, at the time, he was probably about 11. And then we've had people in their 80s. But what I'm in the process at the moment of determining our events calendar for this year of 2025. Once we've determined that, we'll put it on our website and send it to our community whose emails we've got and let them know what events we've got. Because they are unfortunate. We don't ask anybody to pay to come on any of our events. I don't believe in it. They come and they have their day for free. They take my experience, they take the experience of the event, they have it all for free. So, because of that, we're limited on how many we can have per event. So it's strictly on a first-come, first-serve. We'll put it out there on the website and by email to our existing community to say, these events we've got, if you want to come, it's a first-come, first-serve. Let us know if you want to come. And people will do that. So people will pick the events that are suitable for them on the basis of the information they've got. Some are more social. That could be factory tours, like the Formula One race teams we've been to. They're more social. Porsche hosts at Silverstone, the home of UK motor racing. That's more of a seminar-based day. That's more an engagement and a talk and a learning from others while you're there. So people will pick, so the age range is probably from about 11 up to people in their 80s.
Wow, that is amazing. And I'm sure there's so much cross-knowledge that can happen getting people of all different ages together.
Everybody's experience is different. Everybody's condition is different. How they cope with it is different. And as I say, that's why I'm very, very careful that I never offer my experiences up as being prescriptive of saying, this is what you should do, because what's worked for me may not work for somebody else. So it would be very, very wrong of me to do that. So that's why I offer it up as life experience and say, this is what happened in my case. This is what I did to deal with it. And like I said earlier on at the outset, if somebody wants to take that on board, that's great. If somebody thinks I'm talking a load of rubbish, then that's also fine. I'm not holding myself up as the messiah who's got all the answers here.
No, that would be very wrong. Now, we're speaking to university age students, so I have a question for them that I think you could offer a lot of insight into. If they want to support their neurodiverse peers who may be going through different challenges, how can someone offer meaningful support?
The first thing, and this may sound flippant and it's not really meant to be, is knowledge. And that's about taking the time to learn. What is the condition? Obviously, there's a range of neurodiverse conditions. You're not going to learn everything, but to take that time. And again, I speak from personal experience. I am most grateful for people who take the time to learn a little bit about potentially what I'm going through. That can be difficult environments. I work with a friend of mine who I've known for over 10 years personally, and he's taken the time to learn a little bit. Through attending events also, learning about how I interact with society and the challenges I have interacting with society. So it could quite well be, for example, bright lights or loud, noisy environments. And just being aware that those are going to cause issues for me, he can adapt how I interact with society. Because society as a whole, here in the UK, there's very little knowledge of stroke. And stroke is the fourth biggest killer in the UK. And there's very, very little. Most people's not, and this is no fault of the individuals concerned. I blame the charities for this, but we won't get onto that. Most people's knowledge of stroke here in the UK begins and ends with a message called FAST, which is a message that's put out there, which is face, arm, speech, time, which is a message that's put out to indicate when somebody's having a stroke, which is a great message. But what it doesn't do and what the charities haven't done is then follow up to say, these are the challenges that somebody who's had a stroke are likely to be contending with. So somebody can adapt and take that into consideration when dealing with somebody. So I think knowledge is the big thing, just to take a little bit of time to learn about the condition, about neurodiversity generally, and potentially some of the specific conditions and the challenges that they bring. As I say, for me, it can be loud, noisy environments, or bright lights, which ultimately will lead to fatigue. It's said, again, that as a stroke survivor, you use four times more energy on a task than the normal person. So that means my energy level, like everybody, there's only a finite amount of energy you have to start the day. And if I'm using my energy four times faster than you, for example, then I'm going to become fatigued very, very quickly. I'm not going to be able to carry on, which is why in my own case I've had difficulty throughout most of my adult working life since I had my stroke to secure normal employment, because there is no way with my underlying fatigue issues that I could hold down a traditional 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job. An employer would have to be flexible, but again, that's not impossible. I mean, if the pandemic and the lockdown showed us anything, it's that there are different ways of working, that you don't have to be sat in an office all the time. But again, it's just about how willing is society to make allowances for people with challenges, neurodivergent people with challenges.
I love what you said about knowledge, because I think being considered is such a high form of respect, to show that somebody took their time and their energy and their life to actually think about what would impact you. And it's a good point, because it doesn't have to take you a bunch of hours. It doesn't need to cost you a lot of money. But you have to put the effort forth to understand. We are living in the internet age. It's easy to find information.
It doesn't even have to be that. I mean, we're talking, obviously addressing here primarily students. it could quite well be just a small forum, a small group get together of a group of students who there's a group of neurodivergent people, and it can be quite simply a question and answer session of if somebody feels comfortable. I mean, I know, like I've said, I know not everybody does feel comfortable in opening up to the extent probably that I do, but what are the challenges? What are the experiences? What can we do to make it better for you? The sorts of things you would ask if you were confronted with somebody who was physically disabled.
Speaking of neurodiverse students, do you have any advice in specific for students who are neurodiverse?
Look after yourself is the first one. It's very, very easy to be pressured with anything in today's society. We're pressured from all angles and all fronts. And it's very, very easy to feel that pressure and to feel that you must do something. But the best advice I can give is first and foremost, look after yourself. You know what you're trying to cope with. You know what the challenges are. You know what the battles are. In particular, the fatigue one, which is across all neurodiverse conditions. If you're feeling fatigued and tired, please, please rest. And if you need to sleep, sleep. If you can't do something, don't do it. It'll still be there tomorrow. And I think this is where, as universities, they could play more of a part in making, I don't want this to sound horrible, make allowances for students who have these struggles, who aren't going to be able to produce a workload to the same degree, the same extent, the same time frame as, dare I say, normal students. And it could quite well be something as simple as making allowances in an environment. I know they probably vary from university to university, but as I say, I've just touched on the bright lights, the noise and the sound. But it's about if you do feel you need to rest, because if you don't rest, you'll just make yourself even worse. And then that physical crash when it comes will be multiple times worse than it would have been had you not taken that break in the first place.
You are so right on that. Is there a quote, as we wrap up here, is there a quote or a mantra or something that you live your life by out of curiosity, because you have an excellent mindset?
It probably just never take no.
I like it.
Never accept no. Many, many times I've been told, no, you can't do this or you can't do that. And I'm not the sort of person who will accept that. My first thought is usually, well, why can't I do it? If you give me a good reason why I can't do it, then fine, I'll accept it. But if it's just because nobody's done it before, or that's not good enough reason for me.
I love that. I love the perseverance. So if somebody wants to learn more about your organization and what you do, where do they go to learn more?
We do have a website, which is checkeredflagmotorsport.com. And that's checkered, checkered, flagmotorsport.com, where you can go and there's loads and loads of wonderful pictures of me and loads of wonderful pictures of people doing exciting things and in the motorsport environment. A little bit about my background, what we do, and we will be, once we've got the 2025 calendar sorted, we will be posting details of all the events on there. And if there are any neurodiverse individuals out there listening who would like to come to one of our events, then please feel free to reach out. If you want to become part of our community and share your experiences or learn from the experiences of others, again, reach out. There's no pressure. It's very much a social thing. As I say, we do aim to create an environment where people feel safe and able to share their experiences and learn from others. Hopefully we do that in a fun, enjoyable setting. As I say, there's no cost involved in coming on those. I don't believe that people in such a situation should have to pay to come on these events. That was one of the things I was very, very clear on the outset. So any money we raise, I don't take a penny from. All the money goes into Checkered Flag to deliver the events that we are fortunate enough to deliver. They can be anywhere across the UK, ranging from the north all the way down to the south coast of England.
So as we wrap up here, is there anything I did not ask you that you want to say, or anything in particular that you want to share?
No, I think we've covered everything about what I do. As I say, I'm very, very clear, and I apologise to all you lovely listeners out there for continuing to make reference to stroke. But as I say, stroke is my experience, although as Checkered Flag, as I said, we have found the wider neurodiverse community. So whatever your condition, it could quite well be one that I haven't mentioned, and there are others, Parkinson's, for example. ADHD, all sorts of things. We welcome everybody. Everybody and anybody within the neurodiverse community is welcome to come and be part of our community.
I love that, Gary. I think I learned a lot of things today. I think I became a more knowledgeable, better human. And I know that everybody that listened along with us not only laughed and enjoyed your stories and everything you shared, but became more knowledgeable and more able to provide that meaningful support I talked about earlier. So we are so appreciative of you sharing your time and energy with us here on the Campus Chronicles podcast. So thank you.
Thank you again for having me and giving me a platform to talk about something that I am very, very passionate about. And I'm sure it came across how passionate I am about what I do and what I believe in, and how unjust I feel that the neurodiverse community is treated widely. So thank you again for giving me the platform to talk about it.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.